Welcome to another edition of 100% Canucks. John Shannon here, Landon Ferraro there. Landon, we have Darcy Rota coming up on the show a little later, but I got to tell you, I can feel hockey in the air. The overnights are a little chillier. All the discussion, and you see the Americans and the Canadians all gathering on Olympic orientation sojourns in Colorado Springs and in Calgary. Hockey's not that far away anymore. I think I could use another month of summer, but it's going to be hockey pretty soon.
Yeah, see, you're saying you could use another month of summer. To be honest, I was just up in Trail, got up to Christina Lake and saw a bunch of my family, and it was an amazing week. But it's funny how, you know, the last couple days I'm already kind of sitting. I'm like, okay, what do we got when we come back? You know, I knew we had the podcast to do. I was looking forward to that. And to me, I always get to this time of the year and I'm like, just get to the season. Like, I get so excited for the start of hockey again. And, you know, I feel like I've had my fun of summer and it's time to get back to work. And it's even better now as I say, get back to work. I just got to move my mouth and read some stuff and watch games. I don't actually have to do the work anymore. Guys get hit.
Somebody will make you accountable one day. So people on social media will catch up to you at some point. So now, is this a biological clock thing for you? I know you haven't played professionally for a couple of years, and you haven't skated and worked out near as much, but you've been on the ice. Is there just something in your DNA that says, I better start getting ready for hockey?
100%. And it's funny how, I mean, this has been since I started dating my wife, but it's still to this day where, you know, when I talk about, it was last year, I'm not talking the calendar year. That makes no sense to me. It's last year is last season. And the amount of little arguments we get in on timelines, because mine's tied to the hockey season. And as soon as August hits, like my birthday is August 8th. And I always kind of use my birthday as, okay, summer is done. That's my last little fun time. And now it's time to work and it's time to kind of put your head down and get moving again. And it's, you know, this will be my third season out of playing and it has not changed yet. I'm curious if that'll change over time, but for me right now, it's my birthday was at the beginning of the month. It's now the end of August and it's time to kind of get your work boots back on.
Do you miss not playing?
All the time. Really? And I mean, there's parts where, you know, I'm happy that, you know, I wake up and, you know, my knees don't feel very good anymore or something, my neck. And I'm like, you know, I know I made the right decision, but there's not a day that goes by that I miss or don't miss playing. There's nothing else that gives you that same feeling of putting your skates on and knowing what's the best way of saying it. Really, I think you go on the ice and I know every time that I touch the puck or I'm going through a drill that I'm competing against someone and I'm going to know right away, did I win or did I lose? And in life, you can't look at things the same way. You can't be a winner and loser at every single intersection, but I miss that competitive side for sure.
I'm not sure I want to be behind you in the intersection. maybe worse. I don't want to be in front of you in the intersection.
Whether I wasn't a very big guy, but I definitely found ways. I learned a lot from my dad with his stick, how you make sure the guy knows you're there. That's for sure.
What do you, you were not born when the Canucks went to the Stanley Cup final for the first time. And Darcy Rota was a big part of that team. Roger Nielsen's Vancouver Canucks of 1982. What do you remember of hearing about Darcy in your time as a young guy living around Vancouver and living in the province?
Well, it's funny, like when I first got here, it was always one of those things where I knew him as the Coquitlam Express owner and president and GM and him running that organization. And then hockey player was second, right? Like that's just how it was. But anyone that
you were the guy that would walk up to him and says, oh, you played too?
For me, it was, how can I angle my way in just in case I need to go the junior A route? Because he's running a good program. I got to make sure I'm on his good side. But no, like in this city, when his name gets brought up, you see smiles. Yeah. Like, people are proud that he's from this area. He's stayed in the area, got to play for the team. Obviously, 82 was a big thing. I'm over at my in-laws right now because we had a flood over at our house. So I get over here and they ask, you know, who's coming on the podcast today? And I say, Darcy Rota. And instantly there's a big smile like, oh, come on, really? Right? Like the 82, it's exactly what everyone thinks about, right? Like it was the first real time Vancouver got on the NHL stage and yeah. really put their foot down on it. And to people in this area, that means a lot.
The 82 run, and I was there for all of it, just as a kid producer on Hockey Night in Canada. The 82 run was as special as any of them could have ever been. You know, beating Calgary, beating LA, and the only reason they played LA, Landon, was Bernie Nichols and the Pumpernickel and the Kings, who really had no right to be in the playoffs, upset the Edmonton Oilers yeah. in a five-game series. And so the Canucks ended up playing Calgary, as I said, then Los Angeles, and then going against the Blackhawks. And I don't think many people gave the Canucks a chance against the Blackhawks. And yet, if you look at the standings, the Canucks had more points than Calgary. They had more points than Los Angeles, and they had more points than Chicago before they got to the Stanley Cup final. So it was a cool year that was full of ups and downs and lots of fun little things. You know, when you think about Harry Neal being a character, Tiger Williams being a character, Thomas Gradin and Stan Smeal were great on that club, and so was Darcy Rota. So that's who we're going to talk to on 100% Canucks today. Canuck winger, Canuck alumni, Darcy Rota, after this.
I won't keep you long. Darren Millard with a tip for everyone who loves great hockey podcasts like this one. John Shannon and I host the OG of 100% Hockey, coming your way multiple times a week. The guest list is the best you will find. Multiple shows a week ensures you won't miss out on any news, and we dig even deeper into the biggest stories around the NHL. Most of our guests are also friends, so I promise there'll be more conversation beyond the X's and the O's. John really does get bored with that after a while. So join us for 100% Hockey. The name says it all. Subscribe now while you enjoy thinking about it. And enjoy.
Welcome back to 100% Canucks. Landon's in Vancouver. I'm John. I'm in Toronto and joined by one of my favorites, one of my old pals from Vancouver, Darcy Rota. Darcy, welcome to the show.
John, Landon, it's great to be on with you guys. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm gonna let Landon start with the how much he loves that thing over your right shoulder.
Yeah. Well, John instantly told me to be quiet, don't waste it before we got on, but I can't even help it. Like, that jersey behind you is awesome.
Well, Landon, for me, of course, that's the jersey I wore here in Vancouver. It's my favorite, the Flying V, and wherever I go, people ask about the Flying V. So it was the first time reaching the Stanley Cup Finals in 82, and that's in my home office, so it's pretty special for me. Thank you.
You know, the fascination was that what happened when Jake Milford, who was the manager at the time, you know, went and had this whole reinvention of the Canucks ID, the logo, nobody thought this thing had any traction. There was as much criticism as there were compliments, Darcy. When you first saw it in the room, what'd you think?
Well, they had worked for a year before I got here, basically. So I came in a trade, and you know, your first reaction is it's pretty shocking. But I think they wanted something that would really kind of fire people up and get people excited and have that aggression out there on the ice. And it really helped. And as I say, I love it. And I've got when I do charity golf tournaments, I take my gold one to events, and people love seeing it and want pictures with it all the time.
I actually like the gold one more than the black one.
Yeah. I got to ask, too, I mean, just as we're kind of talking about the jersey, and we'll get back to some other stuff later, but, like, I got to put on the Canuck jersey for preseason. I was there for camp before I went to Europe. And I came to Vancouver when I was 10. So it's not like I fully grew up in Vancouver with this team, but when I put on that jersey the first time, it was so much better and more meaningful than I ever thought it would be. For a guy that was, born, raised Vancouver, to get traded back and to put that jersey on the first time, what was that feeling like?
Landon, it was, I'll never take away my 6 years in Chicago. They were special years. I still have, special friends there, former teammates that were great teammates. But to get traded back, as you say, you're a BC boy from Trail, me born in Vancouver, raised in Kelowna, mostly Prince George. I watched the Canucks growing up in the Western Hockey League days. Mm-hmm. And to come back and have a chance to play for the Canucks and experience the highlights of my hockey life here in Vancouver with the Canucks, unbelievable. And, it's something that I actually pinched myself. Did I actually play for the Canucks?
Well, and, the one thing is that you have stayed.
Yeah.
And, the fact that they have gone to the Stanley Cup final a couple of times since. Right. But 82, and we were all there, Darce. We were all part of it a little bit. 82 was crazy when you think about what happened and how the Canucks got to the Stanley Cup final against the Islanders.
Yeah, it really was, John. People don't realize, but the last 9 games of the season, we went undefeated. We went in the playoffs feeling really good about ourselves. We played Calgary in the first round, beat them, went to LA, beat them. Of course, played against my old team, Chicago, and, we game one, we won an overtime. Jimmy Neal scores the overtime winner. And then game two, of course, when Tal Power came, part of hockey and sports. Mm-hmm. And we lost that game. Roger Nielsen was such a great coach. And then, of course, came back to Vancouver, won game 3 and 4. And we go back to Chicago. If we win game 5, we go to the Stanley Cup final. And lo and behold, we win the game 6-2. I scored the 5th goal, biggest goal of my hockey life in the 3rd period. I tell people that all the time. And to reach the final, it was, we went against a great team with the Islanders. They had, so many great players, Botvan, Trache, Bossy, Gillies, Billy Smith in goal, Bobby Nystrom, another BC boy. So, yeah, that was a real special, special year. And, I love talking about it. You were just a young boy back then, weren't you?
I wasn't even a thought in my parents' mind yet.
Now, you kind of buried a bit of the lead there, because in that 9-game streak in Quebec City, if memory serves me, Harry Neal's the coach, goes into the crowd and punches a fan and gets suspended. And that means Roger has to take over.
Yeah, that's correct. There was a bit of a fisticuff near our bench with Tiger Williams, and a fan reached over the glass, and Harry saw that, and Harry, very emotional person, very emotional coach, he went racing the stands to protect our player and protect Tiger, and that's what happened. He got suspended further, and then Roger took over, and, Roger, finally got his chance here in Vancouver. He was a great strategist way before his time, was known as Captain Video. We were so prepared for every game we did, every series we played. And, I just love playing for Roger.
In fact, Roger, Harry could have come back and coached halfway through the playoffs.
That's correct.
He said,
you're right, John. Exactly. Harry, I think it was a 3 or 4 game suspension, whatever it was. And he could have come back and he said, the team's doing well. I'll just stand back and let things unfold the way they're going. And it was awesome.
What was it about, there are 3 generations now that the only reason they think and hear of Roger Nielsen is they see the statue outside the arena. What was it that made him so special?
He was just such a great strategist. As I say, he was nicknamed Captain Video. And all our practices were really thought out well. We were so prepared for every game, every series. Nothing surprises from what teams would do with their forechecking or defensive play or the goaltending. He just really had us really on track to succeed. And, he's the best coach I ever played for by far. And he gave me the opportunity much more than I had in Chicago. Although I played in Chicago regularly, I just got a better opportunity here playing under Roger and scored, 42 goals playing under Roger.
You had 4 20-goal seasons in Chicago, if memory serves me, too. I mean, it wasn't as if you were a a fly on the wall just waiting for an opportunity with the Blackhawks.
No, I was given, you know, an opportunity there, but we were a defensive-minded team and had success. But, you know, I just got a better opportunity when I came to Vancouver. They really gave me the opportunity to succeed offensively. Coming out of junior, I was a high goal scorer, and much like you, Landon.
Yeah, except mine ended in junior. I got to ask you, though, I mean, just out of curiosity, I know he was, you know, a shell of himself at that point, but like you played 26 games with Bobby Orr.
Right.
Like what was it like as a young kid seeing him in the same dressing room, putting on the same jersey?
Yeah, that's a great question in regards to Bobby Orr. You know, he was in Boston and then he got traded. I can't remember, our free agent. I can't remember exactly. By Chicago, and he was, unfortunately, he still had knee issues and didn't really play to his potential like he played in Boston. But to play with Bobby and get to know Bobby, it was a real treat for me, and I put that as really a kind of a real positive for me in my hockey life to play with him. But he should never have left Boston. He should have stayed there with all the controversy that took place, you know, with Eagles, and I really thought he should have been a Bruin his whole life, as we all did probably in Chicago.
Yeah. And then just as I was kind of going through your teams before we got on here, I see in those 3 years, because Stan Mikita was on the team as well, right, they were both listed as assistant coaches at the same time. Were they involved with the coaching staff, or is that a misprint that I read?
Yeah, I they probably were helping out somewhat. I think Bill White was coaching at that point. But they were more assistant captains, but assistant coaches. Yeah, it was really, it was a little complicated back then. And I can't recall the details, but, you know, I played with Mikita for the 6 years I was there, and he was a great inspiration to me. When I made the Blackhawks in 73, my first training camp, right after I made the team, he invited me over for dinner with his family and got to know his family very well. And I think the world of Stan, unfortunately, he's passed now.
So yeah, your story is a fascinating one because, again, I'm going to date myself. I think I was actually there for his last game, and it was against the Canucks.
That's correct.
And again, I'm going to guess. I think Glenn Hanlon was the goaltender, and he was spectacular that night for the Canuck victory, if memory serves me. But that was a fascinating time for Orr because. You were one of those guys in tune with everything around the league at the point, and was he was offered 20% of the Bruins to stay, but his agent Alan Eagleson did not tell him he was offered ownership.
Yeah,
which obviously one of the many issues that got Mr. Eagleson in jail.
Unfortunately, that came out. We heard about that Bobby Orr was given percentage of the Boston Bruins to stay and opted not to. But, you know, when you think of Bobby Orr, you think of him as a Boston Bruin, not a Chicago Blackhawk. As you say, Len, I think 26 games you mentioned over the 2 years, and his health wasn't great with his knees.
Yeah. Hey, so your season as Canuck was the year after you went to the final. You got the 42 goals you were talking about. Who were your line mates that year?
Yeah, that was really special. I came off that Stanley Cup run, 82, feeling really good about my game, and under Roger, and Roger was coaching. I put my line with Thomas Green, Stan Smith, and we just hit it off as a threesome. And Thomas was very unselfish. Stan, of course, the leader, the workaholic type player, and great shot. We just combined as a threesome, and I think we all had our best years in the National Hockey League that season.
And so, like those years in Vancouver, you had some pretty good characters on those teams. Obviously, like, you know, I'm just hearing these stories as I get to meet more people and, you know, from my dad and stuff like that. But like, I imagine you guys had some pretty good fun on those teams as you're going through the years together and traveling. You know, it's not like today where it's all private planes and everything like that. Like you're commercial, you're spending a lot of time with those guys.
No, you're exactly right. You know, of course, the Tiger Williams and Harold Sneps and Richard Brodeur. I mean, the list goes on and on. And that team in 82 was a real character team. And, Yeah, you're right. Most flights were commercial, which is so different than today. And the odd one was a charter. But again, that 82 team, whenever we see each other, it's just a special bond that we have with each other. And, you know, when I see a lot of grandparents and they see they've got their grandkids, they said, I was a big fan back in 82. And they love to tell the story about them being young people and watching the team in 82. I mean, it's hard to believe it's 43 years ago.
And so like that 82.
The other thing, Landon.
Yeah, go for it.
No, you go ahead, Landon. Go.
Oh,
no,
I was just going to say, like, you're on the road. I was a early 20s in 2011 when the team made it to the Cup final here, and seeing, you know, before all the bad stuff at the very end, but seeing how much excitement was in this city and how it really brought everyone together. What was it like in 82 as the first time this franchise got to that point?
Yeah, it was unbelievable, Landon. A couple things that stand out for me is that when we beat Chicago in game 5, we had to go to New York right away to play the first two games. When we came back to Vancouver, the airport was just a mob scene meeting us. And it was unbelievable, the amount of people there. And then after we lost, we had a huge parade downtown. It was like we won the Stanley Cup here in Vancouver. And my family was from Prince George, my mom, my dad, my brother. And my mom and dad kept asking, Darcy, when are you coming home after we lost? And I said, I'm not sure. We're having, you know, the parade. The Griffiths are having dinner for us. We have these different things taking place. I didn't know they were under pressure from the city of Prince George. When is Darcy coming home? And so I got on the plane to fly back to Prince George. It's an hour flight, and I'm walking down the stairs, and I kind of look at the airport, and I see, like, look like white towels, and I see people, and I think, what's going on? Well, there was over 2,000 people at the airport to meet me. Radio stations broadcasting live. It just, to me, really showed, I knew how big it was, the Canucks and the 82 run. That really showed me clearly, being from Prince George, how big it was.
You know, the other fascination was that you talk about the travel. You had joined the club and to play some of those playoff series against Eastern clubs. And nobody really, I mean, when we talk about now, would you ever go back to 1-16? I mean, you played a series against Buffalo, Darcy. And I think the year before you got there was the Flyers and the Canucks playing in a playoff series too. Yeah. And I mean, could you imagine trying to play a playoff series, a first round playoff series from the East Coast to the West Coast at all?
Yeah, that'd be unreal, wouldn't it? I mean, you see the Stanley Cup final can be that way at the end, but yeah, to play a first round like that is extremely difficult. And, you know, being here in Vancouver and have to play in the East Coast in Philadelphia, very difficult. Absolutely.
Yeah. So after you retired, you joined the organization.
Right.
And what was that like? How did you enjoy being in the player personnel group?
Yeah, I mean, when I first retired, I had a serious neck injury and unfortunately couldn't play. I had a spinal fusion. My neck, I can do things now. I just couldn't play professional hockey. And I'm an avid golfer for sure. that's my summer sport. Anyway, Pat Quinn asked me, he's just taken over. He wanted me to stay in the organization, and I did some scouting, and then he really revamped the whole organization and said to me, he wanted me to be the PR media relations person. And I dealt with people like you, John, over the years. And I did that for like 3 years. And then an opportunity came up to work with the National Hockey League in New York under John Ziegler, a kind of special assistant to the president, a new role. And it was really the early stages, and I say very early stages, of a former player getting involved in discipline, looking at player suspensions, looking at whatever took place on the ice, very early stages of that. And then after, I guess, 3 years, John got basically ousted, and I decided that I wanted to come back to Vancouver, and that's what I did.
What was the time with the league like for you?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, it was very interesting.
Eye-opening?
Yeah, very much so. And the one thing that a lot of people may not realize, that John Ziegler was a huge hockey fan. Mm-hmm. And whenever I came in that morning after games, he wanted to come and talk about games. He would watch games. And he had this reputation of not being a real hockey fan, but he really was a huge hockey fan, watched games very, very closely. And, you know, my 2 to 3 years I had there were good years, but I didn't want to live in New York the rest of my life.
Well, and the other aspect is that, you know, in so many ways, the NHL that we see as fans, that we see on television, is the tip of the iceberg. And you, I'm sure you got a real insight into how the machine works more than anything else. And it was probably a bit of an eye opener for you.
Yeah, it really was. And to see a lot of the different aspects of the game from the National Hockey League level was good. And as I said, it's the very early stages of a former player. And I was the first one to get involved with discipline and work with Brian O'Neill occasionally on that. So it was just kind of a start with that.
And then, so after that, did I believe you did a couple years of commentary as well?
Yeah, that's right. I worked with BC TV back then, and Jim Robson is the play-by-play man. I did that for a couple of years and enjoyed that. And then an opportunity came to get involved in junior A hockey, and I coached for a year in Burnaby, and then I had a chance to open up. I live in Coquitlam, and a chance to start a new franchise. I put together an ownership group here in Coquitlam and did that for 15 years or so, maybe not quite 15 years, but 11 years, and had a real good time with it. We won a national championship in 06.
You got to cap that off when the team moved back to Burnaby, or moved to Burnaby. I had a couple friends on that team, and Kyle Turris and Brad Hunt, and you guys went all the way, and I went to a few of those games. You guys put together a really good team. They were fun to watch.
Yeah, thank you. It was a special time, and the reason we started in Coquitlam, had to go to Burnaby because they're renovating the Coquitlam Arena, and I remember when the mayor, John Kingsbury, called me, he said, I've got to talk to you, and he told me, he said, we're in a situation, we're renovating the rink in Coquitlam, and you can't have you play there. Unfortunately, you have to go away for at least a couple of years. And he said, this is really difficult for me to say. And of course, our first year in Burnaby, we win the national championship. with Kyle and Brad were great guys. And of course, yeah, nice to hear those voices and those names again.
So Darcy, based on your knowledge of what's going on and what has happened in junior hockey, what do you make of the new world with the NCAA and the Canadian Hockey League and what effect do you think it's going to have on a league like the BCHL?
Yeah, I think it's going to have a big effect. I mean, and I'll give a perfect example that when we were recruiting Kyle Turris to come and play with us in the BC Junior A Hockey League, he said to me clearly, he says, Darcy, I want a college scholarship, and that's why I'm coming to you. But if the Western Hockey League was available then, we would not have gotten Kyle. He went on to play in the best league possible. So I think it's a real concern for the BC Hockey League. You're going to lose players to the Western League, and the Western League's going to lose players to college. It's going to be interesting to see how things unfold here. What do you guys think about it all?
Well, it's the interesting part is with the BCHL leaving Hockey Canada, so now they can't, you know, like you can't move them up and down. Like I originally was thinking that the WHL would be that level and the BCHL would almost be the affiliates to WHL teams, but that's not going to work now because they're not under the same umbrella. And it's interesting to see how kids are having to make, you know, like we had to make a decision to the Dub or to the BCHL so early, but now they hold so many more cards, which is good in a certain sense, but you don't have that same, you get to your junior team, you work with developing and you're with the same coaches. Like kids are moving around so much now. And I think that it's good in some ways, but I think it will hurt in a lot of others where there no kid has consistency anymore.
Well, let me ask you this, Darcy, what was your budget when you were running Coquitlam?
I want to say it's about $500,000 a year, I believe.
So that's $200,000 less that McKenna got to play for 1 year at Penn State.
Right.
And really what's going to happen is this is going to be a world of haves and have nots. And I'm not sure how the have nots survive.
Yeah.
And that's just not on the second tier of junior hockey. That's in the CHL too.
Yeah. And you're right. And when I say our budget, our focus and our ownership group was to develop the best players we could from British Columbia.
Sure.
And when we won the national championship, I think we had two kids from outside BC, one American on the team. The rest were all from British Columbia. So that was our focus as a group. So that's probably why our budget might have been a little lower than some teams. Mm-hmm. We had a nice area to draw from, problems from British Columbia.
Well, actually, and that's the other thing. When you got drafted by the Blackhawks, you know, how many British Columbians played in the NHL? There weren't very many, were there?
No, that's true. There were not very many players. And, you know, and I love telling the story. When I was born in Vancouver, moved to Kelowna when I was seven, and I started playing hockey in Kelowna, I was just a house league player. And mm-hmm. then my dad was in the car business, opened up a dealership in Prince George. And went to Prince George, first year Pee Wee, I was house league player. First year Bantam, house league player. Didn't make a rep team until my second year Bantam. So I tell this when I talk to kids that, you know, it's just because you haven't made a rep team at 11, 12, 13. I know it's unusual, but I did not make a rep team until I was 14, and things took off for me. And landed just a little side story about Trail. In midgets, we won the British Columbia Midget Championship, AAA Championship. We beat Trail in Trail.
Oh, now that would have been a fun crowd to be in front of.
It was very, very big.
Yeah. And it's amazing what they've done to that rink in Trail. They've done a great job building that back up. But it's interesting that you say how many BC players you have. And in Coquitlam now, with the Express that are still there. And I was just reading an article the other day because Kevin BX's son, if he doesn't make the dub team, will be playing in Coquitlam. And Tally Campbell's the guy that runs the team now. And he talked about how much of an emphasis they did put on this summer of really focusing on BC-born players and really kind of getting back to the roots that you started.
Yeah, that's great. And that's kind of, I hope that's the direction they go and have success with it. That sounds awesome.
But it does speak to where the game has gone in the province. And it all really leads back to the Canucks. It all really leads back to, the old story. I'm a little older than you, Darce, not by much, but I am older than you. And there were two players in the NHL in from British Columbia, two, John Ferguson and Cesar Maniego. That was it. Wow. Nobody ventured over the mountains to scout players. Wow. Nobody came to BC to scout players. And, you know, when you consider not only the development of so many more players, but now the caliber of players, and when you consider, you know, the first round picks, the first overall picks coming from British Columbia, it's truly one of the best stories in the game for the province, is that it has become a hotbed of hockey in so many ways, and it has to point back to what the NHL team has delivered in so many ways.
Yeah, great, great point. And Ferguson and Cesar Maniego, we're both members of the same golf club, Vancouver Golf Club. I see him out there occasionally. He's still playing golf. And yeah, he was a special goaltender that I know he enjoyed playing. He played for a short time with the Canucks, as we all know.
Absolutely. What are you doing now?
Well, what's really nice for me is that the Canucks have signed me. I'm a team ambassador. So I do a third of the season where they have a really well organized. I visit suites and longtime season ticket holders, talk to minor hockey groups. And, you know, for me, being a BC boy, and much like you guys being all from BC, this is really a special honor for me to be an official team ambassador and do this. And besides that, I play golf and do charity events, and I love to come on with you guys. It was great to be on with you guys. It's awesome. And, you know, I know you're from Oliver.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Cowboy, so it's nice to see us cover BC here.
It's great. You know, it's been a long time. I'm glad we connected.
Yeah, it's been great, John and Landa. Thank you very, very much for this. Anytime, guys.
NHL alumni, Canucks alumni, Darce Rota on this edition of 100% Canucks. You know, in your opening, Landon, you mentioned that Darce always brought a smile to people's face. I can tell you right now, in a league where access to players isn't near what it was, Darce Rota was always approachable as a player. And I think we got a sense of it in our conversation with him for the last half hour.
And you would know way better, so I'll ask you this question. If he was an 18-year-old coming into the league now, how good would he have been with the media?
Oh, he would have been, it would have been out of control. I mean, that's, you know, we have created, and we're all guilty of doing it, but we have created this hockey speak.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know how much when you were playing junior, when you were playing pro, you got told how to phrase things in the media, how to manage what you were going to say. But we know darn well that everybody's well tutored on what to say and when to say it. Darcy intuitively knew what to say and did it with one of the great glints in his eye and a smile on his face, and was so approachable all the time. It was fantastic. He would be, and this is not a knock at the, you know, at the Bedards and the Celebrinis and the McKennas, who's going to come down the pipe soon. But he would have been a revelation.
Yeah.
the glibness and the friendliness that he treats people with and still does, obviously, to this day.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely got a couple talking to's when I was, especially when I was younger, of settle down in interviews. Like I grew up in a Ferraro household. We're all fighting to get a word out. But I always remember, it's one of my favorite clips of my dad, was after the Islanders beat Pittsburgh in the 92 playoffs. And you can find it on
93.
Or 93, sorry. And the clip, you can find it on YouTube, but it's him standing in the hallway just outside the dressing room. And him talking about, and it's pure emotion. And you don't see that very often anymore, of literally using a line of, no one gave us respect, now they're going golfing and we're going to the next round. And like that fire, and you see it with Tkachuks a little bit, and there's some guys around the league that are good at it, but the league needs more personality, not forced personality, but the guys that are able to do it, let it show a little more. The fans love it. I love it. It's so good to see. And talking to Darcy, I mean, you could just see the excitement he is to talk about his story or about guys that he played with. And, you know, that's just something that's within him. And that's why he's been a presence around this team for so long.
Well, and you know, there are three generations that, and the Canuck fans remember, you know, what went on in 94, which was spectacular, going to seven games. 2011, spectacular, going to seven games. But too often, the 82 team, probably because they didn't win that one either, but they got swept in four. And dare we bring up how they lost game one with the Harold Schnepp's pass that was supposed to be on the stick but got intercepted by Mike Bossy in overtime. And 2 seconds left to go in the first overtime period, the Islanders score, and a sigh of relief on Long Island for a team that nobody gave any respect to in the Canucks. And it would have been a 1-0 Canuck victory in that if they had won game one, as opposed to being down game one. And quite frankly, the team never recovered from it. It had been a long, arduous run for the Canucks at that point. And losing in overtime 6-5, as they did in game one, changed the whole thing. But that team really was the first time, to your point, that the Canucks got national exposure and people had to pay attention. And we had seen the Oilers were starting to take over. You know, Wayne and Mark and those guys were maturing and they were going to be the future. And here was this lunch pail gang of guys coached by Roger Nielsen, making an impact in four rounds of playoffs. It was fantastic to watch. And it was, well, I never heard the Coliseum louder. I never heard the Coliseum louder than that year. May have been 94 when they beat the Maple Leafs in the conference final, but I've never felt that anything replicated what we saw during the playoff run of 1982.
Yeah. And it's, you know, as you're talking about, you know, what the Coliseum was like my only reference to that would be being at the Vancouver Giants,
right?
The game they won the Memorial Cup. I was in the building for that. And as a kid, I was 14, I believe 15, and seeing how loud that building got, I couldn't even imagine amplifying that to a Stanley Cup final and how cool that would have been. But like, it's to your point, like it was, Vancouver was looked at as a team before that, yeah, we got to go over there. We're going to get 2 points and we're going to get back out of there. And All of a sudden they're not just an okay team. They're a really good team. And, you know, it made the league really start to respect them. And when I first moved back here in 2002, I knew of 94 and that was it. I didn't even know the 82 team got to a final. And I remember talking, I can't remember who to, but it was someone at the Burnaby Winter Club and we were talking Canucks because I always like talking hockey. And I said, like, how cool was it, you know, in 94? And it was an older guy. He worked at the rink and he's like, 94 was great, but 82. Yeah. And I'm sitting there, I was 10 and I'm like, what happened in 82? And he ran me through it all again. And just the pride that he had, because again, it was, you know, much like Darcy saying, when he got back to Prince George and there's 2,000 people waiting for him, like that, it really launched the franchise. But not only that, it launched hockey in BC and put it on a way bigger frame.
First time's always the most special. And,
yeah.
It has been forgotten many, many ways, but it's always great to talk about it. I mean, you brought it up when you saw the Flying V sweater. So,
oh, that, even just the numbering on the back. Like the numbering looks so classic and so crisp. It was, I'd love to have that jersey. That thing was just beautiful.
Somewhere back in the closet over here, there's a number 9 Tony Tanti flying.
Oh, knee. There you go. And you didn't put it on for him last week?
Listen, I'm one of those guys. You have never seen me. You will never see me wear a sweater.
All right. Well, hey. You're going to have to make a promise. So if we get another guy on here that you got his sweater, it's got to at least be put on in the post show.
No, not a chance. I'm not wearing it. I'm one of those guys that I see Bay Street businessmen wearing their Canuck sweater or their Maple Leaf sweater to a hockey game. I'm going, you're making $1 million a year and now you're putting a hockey sweater on? Seriously?
Yeah, I'm sitting there. I'm like, I'm the same way. I wouldn't put one on, but the only way I would is if my kid somehow in any sport got to a level, I'm wearing that jersey again, because I got no reason to put one on anymore and I miss it.
Yeah. I now you're a player. I wasn't a player. I can understand missing that. I kind of feel undressed not wearing a shirt and tie, just like you're going to have to wear on the Sportsnet panel. You're going to have to wear that shirt and tie.
Yeah. I keep trying to push the, do we have to wear the tie tonight? I keep asking. I keep getting the same answer.
Well, the right answer is yes.
Yep.
All right. Have a good weekend, Landon. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, sounds good. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening and watching this edition of 100% Canucks.